Welcome to another episode of Tools, Talents, and Techniques. And today, my guest is working on some pretty cool things here. I'm not going to share everything, but one of the reasons why I think this is so special is because one of the projects that he's working on is really near and dear to my heart, because the location where he's focusing is someplace that is a hidden gem in California, in Southern California. But in my life, spent so much time there. But without any further ado, I want to welcome to the show, Eric. Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for opening up and allowing me to jump on your podcast. I'm excited to chat about what we're working on here.
Yeah, and it's pretty exciting. It's fun. And I love entrepreneurship. I'm into real estate, and seeing what you're doing and how you're doing it was eye-opening for me. And so could you just tell the audience a little bit more about like who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, for sure. We have a experiential cabin company called Free Wild, and it's in Idyllwild, California, which is about 2 hours northeast of San Diego and right outside, about 2 hours outside of LA. We focus on buying these old vacation rental cabin communities and fully redesigning them, very design forward, experience based cabins. My background's in real estate. I've been a real estate developer, was in construction for a long time, got into Airbnb about 10 years ago, and that kind of morphed me into the hotel industry, what we're doing now with Free Wild. So we kind of merge short-term rental stays, which are really unique, one-off type of design experiences, with the hotel space where we have multiple cabins on what we call villages, one piece of land. And then at a high level, the whole goal of our company is to help people disconnect from technology when they travel. So we have something called Wild Mode, where we help people when they travel to our cabins. We have these experiences that we bring them through, so they can lock up their phones and be present. And we say disconnect to reconnect, and be present in the cabins and, of course, in the mountains, which I know you're very familiar with Idyllwild, and it's like a perfect place to just throw the phone present. So at a high level, that's what we do, and it's freaking amazing. I love it.
So before I want to give you my take on Idyllwild and why it's so important to me. I wanted to give you that space to give your intro. But yeah. Explain to our audience a little bit more about Idyllwild and what makes it so special to you.
Yeah, so Idyllwild is, I'm originally from New Jersey. I've been living in San Diego for 10 years or so. And I think within the first 6 months of coming out to San Diego, I heard of this small little mountain town that was like 2 hours from here, and just randomly, drove up there, went for a hike, fell in love with the town, and I've been going up there. Well, now that we own a property, I'm up there all the time, but for 10 years, I was going every quarter, just heading up there and hiking. And it's this special little town that's in, again, it's right outside of Palm Springs, and it's in this perfect location between San Diego and LA and Orange County, where they're famous for not having, any big box stores. It's all locals, right? I think the town has about 4,000 people that live in the town. Tourism is the number one industry that's there. That's really driving that town. So there's no stoplights. It's this small little country mountain town that's outside of one of the biggest metropolitan areas in the world. And not too many people know about it. And it's like, since COVID, a lot more people have discovered it because they're trying to leave the cities and get into nature. And it's just this special, magical place that obviously the mountains are just absolutely incredible. There's endless amount of hiking trails and biking trails. The food there has been incredible. The restaurants that are popping up are great. Lots of shopping. And then they really focus on, there's a big art community that's there as well. So it's just this like mixture of awesomeness that's in the mountains here that are all just like, everyone just wants to be present. Everyone wants to disconnect from all the stuff. And then it's just, there's 3-4 airports that are within a 2-hour drive. So people are flying in and checking it out. And then, of course, Idyllwild's famous for their mayor being a golden retriever, which is freaking hilarious.
Mayor Max, right? Is it Mayor Max?
Mayor Max. Mayor Max, yeah. So, yeah, it's just this incredible place. And people love it. They just love going up there and just kind of disconnecting and being in nature. And it's for SoCal, Southern California, it's unreal to have access to to mountains like that.
Yeah. And one of the things that, especially when I talk to people about the town that ask, like, well, oh, where'd you go? You went to Idyllwild again? It's like, yeah. And they're like, well, what do you do there? I'm like, you just hang out in the town. And they're like, well, is there skiing? It's like, no, not really. They're like, it's just restaurants and nice people and trails and nature. And it's it. And the way they've done it, it's amazing that the town is the destination without a lot of other things. And you're right. The way you're able to just get into that mode, like when you get there, and it has a very special place in my whole family's lives. So you mentioned first going there and having that experience. What was your initial, like, how did you been like, I'm going to do a business here, or I want to start developing, or I want to invest? Like, what was that thought process?
Yeah. That came about through a really interesting situation. So, like, again, I was just going, I never thought of building the business or launching the business in Idyllwild. It was just, Idyllwild was a place that I just absolutely loved. And it was almost like a second home for me living here in San Diego. We would just go up there all the time and just feel completely present and alive, and just felt amazing to be there. And during COVID, all the lockdowns and all the craziness, we wanted to get out. Like, I was living downtown and we're in this little condo and it's like, we had to get out of here. So we rented a house up in Idyllwild for a month during COVID. And we just lived in the mountains for about 6 weeks, actually. And while I was up there, I was mapping out a new business that I want to get into, and I knew I wanted to start designing my own places. I knew I wanted to create experience-based hospitality properties. And again, I was in the Airbnb business and stayed at hundreds of Airbnbs and been part of hundreds of Airbnbs. The idea came to me by recognizing that there was a need to connect people back to nature, to connect them back to beautiful cabins that have incredible hospitality that are also designed to help you kind of disconnect and forget it all, right? This is during COVID. This was during the elections. Like, it was just pure chaos back then. And I remember being up in the mountains and everyone's just glued to their phones and we're just so obsessed with what's happening. And as I was sitting there, I'm like, all I want to do is be in Idyllwild in this beautiful nature. I want to disconnect from it all. And I want to be in a beautiful space as I was doing that. That same trip, I stumbled across this property that we now own. And I said, if I own this property, I can turn it into something great. Literally a year to the day that I randomly walked past this property, we ended up buying that village. It had four cabins on it. And then we bought all the surrounding property to it. And we spent about a year doing the renovations and the design and the concept. And now we're working on the approval to develop out more cabins on the property. And it just kind of, all the pieces just kind of fell into place, right? And there was a lot to that story of how we developed the brand and how we developed started bringing in the team and the vision and all that stuff. But once I was very clear and I had a compelling vision of what I wanted to create, it just seemed like all the pieces were just being laid out in front of me. And we just randomly came across this property. And I just knew that it was perfect for what I wanted to create. I introduced it to a friend of mine who became our sole investor, who just jumped in and helped us finance the property. And now a couple of years later, that vision came to reality, which is freaking awesome. So we love it. And now we're going to, we're starting to work on the expansion of that. And it's been an incredible experience.
So I want to go back to what you said in the beginning when you mentioned your experience in real estate and working the Airbnbs. Tell me about your career journey and that led you to that juncture. How did you originally get into, like, what was your major in college? Like, give me the whole scoop of like how your origin story began.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm the, I'm that typical, troublemaking entrepreneur story where it's like, school was always a struggle for me. I grew up in a blue collar town right outside of Manhattan in New Jersey. And, we grew up in a blue collar town, rough area. School, there was never a lot of great leaders around me or mentors or anything like that. So school was never a focus of mine. I tried to drop out of school and my mom put me into, this is my sophomore year in high school. She put me in a trade school in North Bergen, New Jersey. And I spent half the time working in construction. They were teaching me carpentry skills and stuff like that. And then from there, they got me a job working for the carpentry union. So right after high school, I went right into the carpenters union and started working in these big, tall skyscrapers and just like, you know, working in on the skyline in New Jersey overlooking Manhattan, all this stuff. And at that, at 17, 18 years old, I started developing this skill set of carpentry and construction. And again, I grew up in a blue collar family, so we were always working on something, always learning some type of trade. And I started asking the questions of like, who owns these buildings? Because you would see, you know, guys in suits show up every once in a while and they're pointing things around. And you start asking the questions like, who actually owns these buildings? How do people own it? Do people own it? Do companies own it? All this stuff. And that, those questions really got me into the entrepreneurial world of, you know, I still stay in touch with a high school teacher, but at that time he gave me Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And he's like, hey, this will answer the questions of how you start developing your own wealth and you can buy real estate and one day you can own one of these buildings. So that was like my jump off period to entrepreneurship. And for many years I was working as a carpenter during the day. And by the time I was 20, yeah, so for 2 years. So by the time I was 20, I figured out how to leverage 100% financing to buy my first house, moved into the basement, and at night started renovating the house. And then during the day, I was working as a carpenter. Flipped that house, made money, went out, bought two properties, and kept doing that over and over. And then that went on for, I mean, up until now. Like in Jersey, we developed a small single family home development company. We're just flipping properties all throughout New Jersey. That moved into an apartment building, you know, buying up apartment buildings. And then through that process, as an entrepreneur, as you know, it's like, it's so revealing. Like you got to shed so many different layers, you got to grow. And so I was constantly looking for different masterminds and tools and just like all the things. And long story short, it led me to a mastermind in San Diego. And I flew out to San Diego. It was my first time there. I'm from Jersey. And it's just like, you know, it was shocking, man. It was life-changing to see, like, in the middle of February, people are on the beach chilling, taking phone calls, running their businesses, making money, and just like, this is freaking awesome. Like, I need to figure out how to move to San Diego and start a business that I can run on my phone so I could chill on the beach, right? That was the dream. And then a couple of things kind of fell into place that allowed me to move to San Diego. And I just kind of, I took the risk. I jumped over across the country, moved into what's called the Entrepreneur House, which we could talk about, which is an incubator house. And then from there, I figured out that Airbnb was, and this was the early days of Airbnb, but I was looking for a business that was in real estate that I could also leverage technology to scale. Right? Because my previous business of flipping houses and apartment buildings, now it's a little bit different. But back then, 10 years ago, you had to be in the town. You had to be there. You had to be running, you know, it kind of locked you into the markets that you're in. And I learned that Airbnb, I could rent somebody else's apartment and with their permission, put it on Airbnb and make money. And I was like, hey, this is the business I want to do. And I could run this from my cell phone anywhere in the world. This is awesome. So that was kind of the introduction to that. And that was, you know, from there, we've had such a crazy experience of ups and downs and different verticals within the Airbnb industry. So yeah, I know I just threw a lot at you, but,
it's great context. It's great context to know like the whole journey of what you did.
Yeah, so and the journey's still going, man. The journey's still going.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But one of the things, like when you were in that stage, especially when you were like, going to drop out of school and you're doing this, and then you're starting to find your way. And again, you're always finding your way. Was there? And you started to see other people. Was there like what was the fire behind that? Was it more of? And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but was it like I want to do this, but I don't know how to get there, or was it just out of curiosity? Like what was your energy level like? And like, what was propelling you towards taking these risks?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. It's, you know, I look back at it now because I'm just a completely different person than, you know, who I was, you know, growing up and where I came from and all of that. And, you know, look, when I mentioned school was a challenge, when school's a challenge to you as a kid and you and all the adults are around you are telling you that you are not capable of keeping up in school, that, you know, I was left back in the second grade. The school system wanted to put me on Ritalin and all the ADD medicine and all that stuff back then. Luckily, I had great parents that never allowed that, right? And that, you know, my parents at an early age, like, hey, school, this structure is not designed for someone like you. And they made it really clear to me that I understood what was happening. I just had no interest in playing the game. Right. I had no interest in following authority. I had no interest in sitting behind a desk for hours when I wanted to be out, you know, playing and doing other things. Right. I was very active. I wanted to do that stuff. And I knew that I would the things I was interested in, I would get obsessed with and I would go all in on it. I would be very, very curious. And I love carpentry. Like carpentry got me into I love building things and creating spaces and all of this. I remember at 17 years old, just like I knew that I didn't want to be a union carpenter for the rest of my life. That is hard work, man. Like, you know, it's the days that I'm struggling when I build my business and, you know, I'm in a temperature controlled, beautiful place, you know, beautiful house in San Diego, California, running businesses online in my, you know, in my slippers. I'm like, when I'm struggling in my business, I think back to those days when I would hang sheetrock or put down, you know, lay concrete and, you know, like all that, that is freaking hard, honest work. But I knew it wasn't for me. I knew I wanted something else. And, you know, when I started asking those questions of like, how does somebody even buy a building like this? You know, we're talking 100 story type of, you know, buildings. Luckily, I had one great mentor, Frank, who is my high school teacher, who got me the job as a carpenter, who, and that first year we stayed in touch. He saw something in me. I guess the questions, the curiosity, he saw like, hey, this is an outlier to the rest of the kids that are in this school. The high school I ended up graduating from was a school for like problem kids, essentially, you know, kids that were just getting in trouble that just couldn't really focus and like all that stuff. So he, you know, he kind of mentored me for the first year. And as I started asking those questions, that's when he gave me Rich Dad Poor Dad. He's like, hey, there's more to this than just trading your time for money, right? He's like, you can learn how to develop wealth. Like anybody can do this. You just have to learn the skill sets and implement it. So he gave me Rich Dad Poor Dad. I remember reading that and not really believing that it was possible, but was interested. And then the next book he gave me, and by the way, Rich Dad Poor Dad was the first ever book I ever read, like up until that point. Like, yeah, I wasn't a reader, you know, it wasn't, you know, up until that point, everything was a struggle, right? Educational wise. Then he gave me Who Moved My Cheese. Remember that book? Little thin book. Have you ever read that?
Yeah, I have. It's been a while, but yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. He gave me that book and I was reading it on the job site during lunch when everyone else was at one side of the job site drinking beers and hanging out and all that stuff. I was in the corner reading this book and one of the suits that was running the job saw me reading that book, came over, forget exactly what he said to me, but he said like, hey, something to the point of like, if you keep reading those books, you can own a building like this one day, right? So it was just like all the dots were connecting of like, oh, there's something here. There's something to learn here. So I just started going through this process of like entrepreneurship and education and like, where would you start? I need money. Well, then how do you get money? And then you start learning about 100% financing at the time. And it's like, oh, well, if I have this skill set, I can renovate and flip a house. Let me just do that and I can make some money, so on and so forth. So like the curiosity was there. And luckily I was aware enough to pay attention to a few little factors and comments from people that I kind of looked up to that kind of guided me down this pathway.
It's so amazing to me sometimes, especially having these conversations and when you can identify those moments. And one thing I love about having these conversations, when you hear something, what if you hadn't been reading that book at that lunch break? I mean, things could still work out you know, well, and all those things. But I think it's so important to reflect on things, not to dwell, but to reflect on those moments in your life. Like, wow, just me being open to doing something that I didn't normally do, which in your case was reading at this point. And the fact that you did it and somebody recognized that and that fuels your tank. And then that gets you to the next stage and the next stage, man, that's such a cool tidbit. Thanks for sharing that.
It's crazy, man. It's like I think about that moment a lot. And I wish I remember exactly what the guy said, but I guess it doesn't really matter. It's the impact he had on me at the moment. And I never talked to that guy ever again. He just like, he was impressed to see someone reading a book on the job site versus like BSing, you know, during the lunch break. And he said something to that effect to me. And I remember sharing that with my sister within a day or two of that experience happening. And at this time I was telling people like, hey, I was interested in buying real estate and I want to do something different, blah, blah, blah. And she said something to me that made me take the leap. She's like, hey, well, if your plan is to buy real estate, make it plan A because plan B distracts from plan A, right? Because I was saying like, hey, I got this carpentry job and I'll do this on the side. And, you know, I was 19, 20 and she's like, no, if you want to do this, you gotta take the leap and just do it. So that's when I started making the moves to kind of leave the carpentry union and get into developing real estate career. So yeah, all these small little pieces kind of build. And then, you know, being 20 with no responsibilities at the time, like, you know, that definitely helped to be able to move into a basement of a house and start renovating it to flip it, right?
So when you mentioned the all the lessons that you learned in entrepreneurship, and you don't have to necessarily start at one specific spot, is there anything that you did that you were like, wow, that worked out, but if I could do it again, these are the efficiencies, or I would have started here? Is there anything that you can identify in your journey that you would say like, oh wow, this is what I would do differently?
Yeah, I think about it a lot. I do a lot of reflection, a lot of goal setting, journaling. So like these are present thoughts of mine frequently.
I would imagine so, especially with what you do and the environment that you're setting up in Idlewild. That's why I figured I asked. I think you have these insights.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I was recently thinking about this. If I air quote can go back and do it over again, like what would I, or if I give myself 20-year-old self some advice, what would I do? One is like the belief system that it's possible, right? And like, it's like, I someone said this to me the other day in a certain context of why not me, right? Like he's overcoming a major health issue that has a very small chance of, you know, success, but there is a small chance of success where most people think of that bigger failure number. His mindset went to why not me? Why can't I be one of those success stories? And I love that freaking way of thinking. And that's the way I think now. And that stuff inspires me now, but it took me literally 20 years to develop the belief system in myself and my surroundings and my ability and just like all the things to be able to make this stuff happen. And of course, it's, you know, everything happens for a reason. I'm here now because of that journey. But if I can go back to that 20-year-old, it would be, you know, the belief system of like, why not you? Move faster, believe in yourself, take bigger risks. Because even during that process, I had this belief system that I couldn't, that I was making the wrong decisions. I couldn't learn fast enough. Like all these things that the air quote school system and my journey through school put into my brain of my limited thinking really held me back from creating, just creating and getting faster results, bigger results. And then two is, you know, one of my favorite quotes is you're the total sum of the five people you spend the most time with, right? And it took me a long time to recognize that the people I was surrounded by were very toxic people that, you know, although were fun to hang out with and they were homies and they were cool, they much rather, you know, keep everyone down low versus helping you rise, right? So it took me a long time to recognize like even the environment and the humans that are inputting their thought beliefs into me, like I'm believing all that stuff. So that was a big reason why I moved to California and moved into the entrepreneur house, was simply to surround myself with people that were positive thinkers, that were taking big action and taking big risks, but then also wanted to support everybody around them be successful. right? So like, I think about that a lot. It's like, why not me? And then who am I surrounding myself with right now?
So besides getting 3,000 miles away from them, was there anything consciously that you were like, how did you start to create that separation besides just going away? Did you, and again, you don't have to throw people's names out there, what you did to cut them off, but like, was there a real conscious effort to say like, hey, I'm not into this anymore. I'm not doing this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I noticed that when I was interested in learning how to become an entrepreneur, become wealthy, become financially independent, and I would share that with the people around me, even though they were hustling, right? And they were working and they were making money. It was all about the mindset of this system is designed against us, right? We're just kids from Jersey. It's like, you know, the only way that you make money is that you work hard. You work your ass off during the day. And then at night you drink beers and you go to sleep and you do it all over again. Right. And it's like, once I started recognizing that life wasn't for me, I didn't cut everybody out of my life. It was, you know, like the real toxic human beings I would separate from immediately, family and friends that I'm still friends with now to today, I would separate from like, no, I'm not going out to the bars. No, I'm not interested in hanging. I'm not interested in going to the party. Like, you know, I got work tomorrow. I'm building this business. I'm doing this thing. I got, you know, I'm going to try to read this book right now. Like, it was the conscious effort of like trying to grow, right? And it's like, people either grow with you or they help you grow or they don't. And the ones that don't, you got to separate from. And you know, I'm a big believer that not every single relationship in your life is meant to be for life, right? Even family, like if it's not a relationship where you're bringing value to them and they're bringing value to you, just because they're in your life doesn't mean that they have to be in your life forever. We, as adults, we get to choose who we spend time with. And I really value that. I really value surrounding myself with good human beings that, you know, just honest human beings.
Tell me about this entrepreneur house. How'd you find it? How did you engage with them? Tell me about the whole experience.
Yeah. So, when I came out for that mastermind, that real estate mastermind, I fell in love with San Diego. I met some people. I had a friend from Jersey that moved out to San Diego a couple of years before me. And, so I just started telling people, I'm like, I'm doing this. Like, I'm moving to San Diego. Like, you know, I don't want to live in Jersey anymore. I don't want to shovel snow. I'm good. I want to chill on the beach and figure out this whole lifestyle business, right? And just this was like Facebook days, right? So as I'm communicating, I'm sharing this on Facebook. Someone tagged me in a post for the entrepreneur house that was looking for a new roommate. And I jumped on the phone with the founder of the house, Chandler Bolt, who's a entrepreneur from Austin, Texas. And the concept of the house was you are who you surround yourself with, right? And they rented this huge 6-bedroom house in Mission Hills. And they had a whole application process. It was like a frat house. They had like an application process and like all this stuff where their idea was like, how do I surround myself with like-minded human beings, people that are on a path of growth, right? Growth from scaling businesses, growth from, you know, scaling health and just their personal being, right? And so, yeah, jumped on the phone with them. They invited me to move into the house. And 2 months later, I moved in, just didn't know anybody. And I just took the risk to jump into this incubator home.
What were the other types of businesses they were building there?
There's a lot. There's a lot of company, a lot of people that came through that house throughout the years. I lived there for about 5 years.
Oh, wow. You're there 5 years? That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still going today. Like people can look up the Entrepreneur House on Instagram. I don't know how active they are, but it's probably on like the 7th or 8th version now of roommates that have gone through there. But yeah, some very, very large companies have gone through there. Like, do you know the company Dr. Squatch Soap Company?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So Jack is the founder of the company. Close friend of mine, he was a roommate. He moved in a month right after me. There was the book publishing company there. Yeah, just all different types of companies, service companies, real estate companies, product companies. And then there was a lot of people that moved in that liked the idea of being a successful entrepreneur, but would not, that weren't really a great fit. So you learn a lot. I learned a lot through that process of like, who is like, what it takes to be like a real successful entrepreneur today. And then how to see through a lot of BS as well, excitement and hype. But when it comes down to, you know, putting the work in, it's just not there. So
yeah. Who's willing to do the work? Who's willing to do the work and what that work looks like? And also I one thing that I've realized is that not everybody's work looks the same, right? Like somebody can be like really focused, or some people need to be doing, some people like to sit down, some people like to walk, some people, it looks different ways. And I haven't lived in this house. It sounds awesome though. But you start to realize like, maybe I'll try something like that. Or you get inspired by their actions or their methods. Yeah, that's so cool, man.
100%. Yeah. And we never looked for entrepreneurs that were doing the things that we thought was the right way of doing it. That wasn't the point. The point was like, how do you surround yourself with like-minded people that believe in growth, right? Like, how do we always be growing? How do we, that's one of our core values for my company, is like, always be growing in any aspect, right? Like right now, I mentioned to you that before we started recording that I just got back into jiu-jitsu. I've been like in and out of jiu-jitsu for years. Now my mindset is like, how do I grow within jiu-jitsu? So I'm reading the books, I'm asking the questions, I'm showing up for the sessions, I'm putting the time in. I'm a student because I'm excited about the growth. And if I can get 1% better at this and continue to grow, like it's a fun journey. And that's at the end of the day, what we were looking for in roommates. And it didn't matter if you had to, if you were focused on growing like a $1 billion company, or if you were just creating a 6-figure service company that just gave you your time back. Didn't matter. It was that type of personality that we were looking
for. Yeah. Entrepreneurship in general and what you're doing, I'm going to say, and I hope maybe you agree with that, I would like to hear your opinion. How much harder is this than you thought it would be? I mean, or are you just in the flow and you're like, no, I'm enjoying the journey? Like, what did you think this was versus what have you been going through and how do you deal with it?
That's a great question. I think my response to that is ever evolving, because entrepreneurship entrepreneurship is ever evolving. It's like something that, seeing some of my roommates that have gotten to those levels where they have $1 billion companies, and they started at the same level I did, and within, you know, 10 years have been able to, or 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, been able to scale a company to some publicly traded companies. Some companies have sold and made hundreds of millions of dollars. I started recognizing that there's always problems to be solved. So to answer the question, I think back in the day, I thought that I can build something, get to this point, and then everything's good, right? I can buy the real estate and have enough houses to where I never have to worry about money again, right? Or I can sell this part of the company, make a lot of money, and then I'm good. I'm chilling, right? That's never the case, right? And there's never, I used to think too that you can build a business. And maybe some people can. I've never seen this at a high level, but I used to think that you can build a business to a point where it's just fully running without you involved and you're getting cash. There's no problems and it's just operating by itself and it's solid, right? That's never the case. What I've come to learn, especially the last year, is business and entrepreneurship is a consistent game of solving problems. Always, 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 always. Everyone tries to evolve the problems, but it's a game of solving problems all the time. You're solving problems for your clients and customers. You're solving problems for your team members. You're solving problems for your accountants. Like, it's always a thing that you have to get obsessed with overcoming the problem, finding the solution to the problem. Again, had a couple of friends that have built companies by themselves and just made, you know, an outrageous amount of money that you technically don't have to worry about money ever again. But now the new challenge, the new problem that comes up is, how do I keep this money? How do I grow this money? How do I raise a family in this setting to where they're not spoiled and just given everything on a silver platter, right? How do I build grit and character into our families now? So it's like, you're always going to be solving problems, and that's the game that you have to get obsessed with and fall in love with. I know that was a long response, but I think that was the major journey to this of like, there's no finish line. There's no, in entrepreneurship, it's not a race. It's not like a game that we're playing where there's a scoreboard and time limits. It's like, you know, you're going forever. And if you make the money that, you know, if you're blessed and you're able to make the money that you desire to make, now the next problem to solve or challenge to solve is, how do you grow that money? How do you keep that money? How do you keep yourself passionate and excited and healthy? And so it's always something going on, and that's the game you got to love.
Yeah. And to your point, getting obsessed with it in a way that is not harmful to yourself, right? Like, and actually loving the process. And that's sometimes like the expression, the journey is the destination. It resonates with me so deeply, because I do think, even just doing the podcast and, you know, some of the other projects I work on, I love doing it. And sometimes people are like, where do you find the time? I'm like, I enjoy doing it. So you find the time. And you know, just on a personal note, like, I've had some injuries in my life. Like, I've my knees and Achilles and shoulder, and a lot of the things that I liked doing before were like, I couldn't do anymore. I couldn't play basketball anymore. Can't play rugby anymore. So I had to fill that time with other things. But now those other things that I do are revenue generators too. So like, finding that way of being has been such a fun part of the process. And you're right. It's, that's awesome, ends. It never ends.
You don't want it to end.
No, I don't. I love it. I love the process. I mean, maybe if I get to that point where it's like, oh no, what am I going to do with all this money? Like, we'll see. That's a good problem to have also.
Sure.
I want to make sure that we talk more about the businesses that you like, because thanks for giving me the context on who you are and your life and the journey. But I want to really understand, you know, you're developing out these properties now, but you have another business that you're working on too. Could you share that with us?
Yeah. So it's all under the same company, Free Wild. So our company is called Free Wild. We're a hospitality brand, and we have the cabin real estate side of the business, but we also have a service side of the company that we call Free Wild Foundry. And this is where we're leveraging our skill sets as a team to drive value to other business owners and other hospitality providers. So last year we launched our first service called RPM. It's a revenue management service for boutique hotels and short-term rental operators that are doing $1 million or more in top line revenue. And essentially, you know, we were asking the question, do we go out and raise money for Free Wild? Because we have big vision, and there's a lot of work to do to develop a large hospitality company the way that we want to build it. And there's a couple of ways that you can do that. One way is bootstrapping it. Second way is fundraising it and going through that whole journey. And we explored it, but I recognized like it wasn't the game I was willing to play. I wasn't at this point, I'm not willing to play the VC game and all of that. And I've been blessed to build a team of just highly skilled, talented, incredible human beings that were like, hey, what are we the best at, right? What can we be the best at in the world and bring value to other people to where it comes easy to us, but very challenging to other people? And we created a whole list of things to go after. And, you know, we may release some of those in the future as well. But what we recognize is the one thing that we do better than anybody in the world is revenue management. And now I know revenue management sounds freaking boring compared to developing experience-based cabins in the most beautiful nature areas in the world, but it's such an exciting game because we come in and we have a team of expert revenue managers. We come into these companies, these short-term rental operations that have anywhere from 50 to 300 Airbnbs and short-term rentals and boutique hotels, things like that. We help them price their properties in a way that hotels price their properties. And we take over the burden of making those daily decisions and implementing those strategies that will help book out the properties as a whole. And we're getting incredible results. Like we're helping our clients raise their revenue by 10 to 20%. Which is bringing us on as a service. are companies that are doing, you know, $1 to $15 million. That's a significant amount of growth, which is making one simple decision to work with us on the revenue side, right? So that is very, very exciting. It's growing like crazy. The results that we're getting is exciting. The people that we're working with is freaking awesome. And what's great about that is as that that side of the company is growing, it's funding the main goal and vision and passion, which is the cabin side and the real estate side, which is, if you know real estate, it moves very slow. It's the complete opposite of what we do with revenue management. So we get to scratch the itch of like moving fast and growing companies and getting huge results really, really quick, with also developing out this very slow, longevity type of business in the real estate hospitality side.
You mentioned your team and how great they are. How did you go about building your team? How many people are on your team? What was the first, I'm just going to pepper you with a couple of questions and let you go from there. But how many people on your team, like what was the first person you brought in, and how did you go about forming Voltron? How'd you do that?
Yeah. So when it comes to Freewild specifically, you know, again, I had a previous business that I was working on as I was building out Freewild. You know, again, I had this large and still do have a large vision for Freewild. And I knew that's where my heart was. And I also knew like, this is what I can do for the rest of my life, regardless of the size of the business. Right. And I'm like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm all in on this. So I started taking my time to build the brand of Freewild, the vision, the ethos, the culture, and started like just brain dumping down and creating this thought, this vision I have into reality, right? And then I started communicating that. I started asking the questions like, who do I actually need to help me build this thing? And I just started to have an endless amount of conversations with people. And luckily, I'm surrounded by incredible people that are very resourced and also want to see the people around them grow. So as I'm like sharing, like I'm building this business, I'm going to buy this property, I'm going to have these cabins all around the world in the most beautiful nature locations, this is going to happen. And I'm going to work on this for the rest of my life. Because of the passion, because of what I'm creating, it started attracting in amazing people. And I've just been blessed to be like, people connect with this brand, people connect with the idea. So my partner, Jasper, and I decided to launch Freewild. We started putting that out there. We found the most incredible investor who's just like, yo, I'm in. I love this idea. Here's a couple of $1 million. Go buy that property. Let's get this started. And that just like chain reaction into hiring and attracting in amazing people. So to answer part of those questions, it's like the team right now, very small team, and the goal is to keep it small, lean team, high profit. One of the first people we hired was Kay, who I think connected us. She reached out, found your podcast, introduced it to me. And I'm like, yep, let's jump on this. This is freaking awesome. She leads up our branding and marketing. So she was our very first hire, and she built the brand. She created the merch. She does all the stuff, creates all the marketing, and just a genius when it comes to that side. And then we started building out our ops team. So we have operational team members that help us with the properties. We're now building out right after this call. Actually, I have my fifth interview for today. We're building out a revenue management team. So this year we're hiring a lot of people, revenue managers, ops people, customer service. It's kind of crazy, but the ethos, it all started with me just getting super clear on the vision and the ethos of what I was creating, and then communicating that with as many people as possible with confidence. And then because of that, I was able to attract in very talented people.
You know, to that point, and you know how we got connected. So I get emails and get contacted quite frequently from people like, oh, I got this person for your podcast, this and that. And you know, I pretty much target the folks that I want to have, because it's usually people that I want to learn from, that I'm like, wow, I really like what you do. And so it's more of my outreach than accepting people coming in. But when I saw what, you know, when your team reached out and I saw what you were doing and I saw it had to do with Idlewild and I saw your background, I was like, oh my gosh. I need you to come on the podcast. And the way that you've captured that essence of Idlewild and that feeling. So yeah, so shout out to your team for the branding and everything you've done, because you nailed it.
Thank you. It really
does capture the essence. And you know, I know we're running short on time here, but one thing I want to say is like, I wish you so much success with all of your business and what you're doing, but not so much success that too many people come to Idlewild and ruin it. If all of a sudden they got to start putting up like more streetlights and, you know, I don't know, another company was, you know, but because the feel, the essence of the community itself is so special. And
I think
we're all lucky, the community, and are lucky to have someone like you, you know, making a positive impact there. So kudos.
Yeah, and thank you, man. Yeah, and that's our goal, is to, like, we don't want to be, I'm not interested in being that company that moves into these markets and completely shift the market. It's like, if you look at our designs and the way that we're building these properties, yeah, it's an outlier to the market, but it fits into the community. Our and all the people that work on the property are people that live in Idlewild, and like their life is part of Idlewild. Our goal is to move into these markets and these towns and become part of the town, right? Something that the locals would be proud of. And yeah, we want to keep Idlewild what Idlewild is, right? We don't want to see, you know, like you see what happened to Joshua Tree after COVID. So many people moved to Joshua Tree and things started popping up. The town just became different. And it's not bad. I love Joshua Tree, and I hope to have a free wild there one day. It's just different than what it was 10 years ago. And it's populated, and like the culture has changed. And although Idlewild's culture is changing a tiny bit, where there's more shops and new restaurants and like cool coffee shops, stuff like that popping up, and now free wild, the essence of Idlewild still stays the same. And we want to preserve that as best as possible, because that's why we're there. We freaking love it. So yeah, come out to Idlewild, experience it. But the goal is not to build hundreds of these in Idlewild. By the end of our development, we'll have upwards of 15 cabins, and then we're going to cap it there.
Yeah, man. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story. Before we go, do you want to tell and I'll keep everything in the show notes, but can you tell people where to contact you and how to get in touch?
Yeah, for sure. Anyone wants to check it out, it's freewild.com. We spell wild with a Y, so freewild.com. And then if you want to get in touch with me, it's Eric D. Moeller, either on Instagram or LinkedIn.
All right. Eric, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you, man.
I'd like to take the chance to introduce our audience to Mr. Lee Mills and his company, Pixley. Pixley is the fastest and easiest way to document and collaborate on your projects. Photos, videos, tags, tasks like punch lists, reports, and dashboards. Thousands of customers trust Pixley, from large hospitals, commercial real estate professionals, and every size contractor and field service professional. Try Pixley for free. Go to www.pixley.ai, and if you mention Dustin Sutton on your dropdown, you get 25% off. Again, that's www.pixley.ai. Imagine Dustin Sutton. Thank you very much. And now, here's the next episode of Tools, Talents, and Techniques.